Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports, right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to be with you on the afternoon drive, and we have a very fun and entertaining show lined up. We have a great group of guests that will join us over the next couple of days. It is the middle of the week already, so I want to preview an upcoming fight this Saturday, live from T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. The return of Conor McGregor in the cage. He'll go toe-to-toe with Habib, UFC 229. I'll be honest with you. I don't think McGregor stands a chance on Saturday. I really don't. I know he just signed a, six or eight fight deal with the UFC. I don't care. I think he gets beat, and I think he gets beat handedly on Saturday. We'll see if our guest, our Drive Time Sports UFC insider, Larry Pepe, who is a guru when it comes to the sport, makes numerous appearances throughout the country on national media outlets. He'll join us later on in the show. We'll talk UFC 229 and McGregor Habib. Also on the show today, it's the middle of the week, so we got to talk high school football. This Friday, the Emory Spartans will take on the Union Cougars right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I think it's a winnable game for Emory. We'll see how this team, if they can bounce back, two straight losses falling to Carbon, and then last week, Morgan. Coach John Famala will join us a little bit later on in the show. Yesterday, it was a big day throughout the high school ranks. The golf season is now finished. Carbon and Emory, how did they stack up against the competition? Carbon finishes fifth. Emory finishes eighth. Complete write-ups on both of those results right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. And it is a busy night because we have middle school football. We do this once a year. I always look forward to it. It's a chance for the middle schools, Helper and Mont Harmon, to take over the airwaves and shine tonight. We get Helper and Mont Harmon from Carbon High at 5:30 p.m. We'll talk a little bit about that game as well. I'll be joined tonight in the broadcast booth by Benny Rondinelli, and you can watch the game live at KOALITV.com. So we have plenty to get to on the show today. I want to start by talking about Major League Baseball. How about that game last night? Colorado Rockies pull through, pick up a 2-1 victory over the Chicago Cubs in 13 innings. If you managed to watch the entire game, I tip my hat to you. I pulled it off, but I was tired this morning. It's one of those marathon baseball games. Both managers, Joe Maddon and Bud Black, had to throw it all out because there is no tomorrow. There was no tomorrow. The Rockies move on. They'll take on the Milwaukee Brewers tomorrow. And then we get the Dodgers and the Braves in the National League. Tonight, the AL wild card between the A's and the Yankees. We already know that we have the Astros and the Indians, and then we have the Red Sox awaiting the winner of tonight's game. Some compelling baseball. Last night was as entertaining as it gets. And like I said, it took 13 innings to get a win. Kendricks happened to be the down man for the Chicago Cubs. I thought Cole Hamels was great. And while I didn't necessarily agree with Joe Maddon pulling Cole Hamels, because I get the idea that you've got to save something, but really you don't, because if you don't win that game, it's over with, right? So ultimately, for me, there were some things that I questioned with Joe Maddon, but here's what I could not get over last night. Following the conclusion of that game, Twitter was blowing up with the idea that Joe Maddon would not be back as manager of the Chicago Cubs next season, and not on his own merit, based on the fact that management may try to get rid of him. I couldn't believe that. Chicago Cub fans really want to get rid of Joe Maddon. Are you crazy? Are you thinking straight? Now, fortunately, a story comes out today that says Joe Maddon is expected to return for a fifth season, despite the fact that they lost in the NL Central tiebreaker and the NL wildcard. And I get it. They lost back-to-back games at Wrigley Field. And Cub fans are probably a little bit frustrated this morning. Madden has 1 year left on his deal, and I'm telling you right now, you will not find anyone better for the job this offseason. I don't care if you're talking Joe Girardi. I don't care. The idea that Joe Madden should not return as manager of the Cubs is insane. You realize he is the only manager in franchise history to take the team to the postseason four consecutive years. And again, I don't care if they went in twice as a wild card and twice as a division winner. He won a World Series with a franchise that hadn't won in over 100 years. And Cub fans really want this guy gone? Are you nuts? Cubs had the best record in the National League for much of the second half of the season. And I get it. Offense went a little stale towards the end. You know, you lose the wild card game. You lose the tiebreaker game. You score two runs at home in two nights. But you played the Rockies. Kyle Freeland was a beast all year for the Rockies. And you played the Milwaukee Brewers, maybe the hottest team in the National League at the moment. This right here is, I guess it gives credence to the idea that sports is a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately type deal. Nuts. Cub fans, you are crazy if you want this guy gone as your manager. Let's take a look at some of the other news circulating around the national sports front. Cubs shortstop Addison Russell. He suspended 40 games by Major League Baseball. I will say this. Russell, numbers don't pop out at you, but this guy knows how to hit when runners are in scoring position. And this wasn't a good look for the Cubs late. Russell accepts a suspension for 40 games because he violates Major League Baseball's joint domestic violence and sexual assault and child abuse policy. He's accepted the suspension. It is retroactive to September 21st. He will not appeal. He said that he will participate in a confidential and comprehensive evaluation and treatment programs, which will be supervised by MLB's joint policy board. Russell denied the allegations, was placed on administrative leave after September 21st. And he was not on the wild card roster for the Cubs. And I'll tell you, they did miss him. And I'll throw a name out there for you if you are a Cubs fan. Be upset at Terrence Gore. You got to wear that inside pitch. Gore tried to play it off as if he was hit on the elbow. He didn't get hit. You got to wear that on the inside. You got the NL MVP, the potential NL MVP. He'll finish second in the voting. Javi Baez on deck. You represent the game-tying run. Baez represents the game-winning run. You got to wear that inside pitch. You have to. Terrence Gore is who you should be upset at today. And, of course, Addison Russell for this, just, again, a 40-game suspension late in September. The statistics may not be eye-popping. This guy knows how to hit when there are runners aboard. That's really it as far as the national sports headlines. Not a lot going on. We have preseason NBA basketball right now. We're still a couple of days away from some major games in college football. The NFL makes its return tomorrow. It is a quiet day on that front. That's a quick look at everything that's happening in the national sports front. One more note as far as Major League Baseball goes. Tonight, AL wildcard contest. The A's and the Yankees. Start time for that game is at 6 p.m. Liam Hendricks will take the ball for the A's. Luis Severino on the mound for the Yankees. We've got a break for just a moment. Local sports update coming your way. Plus, we'll catch up with Coach John Famalo and talk UFC 229 with Larry Pepe on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Boscarini with a look at local sports. And the high school 3A golf season came to a close yesterday, with the second and final day of competition at the 3A state tournament, which took place in Taylorsville at the Meadowbrook Golf Course. Entering the final day of competition in third place, the Carbon Dinos dropped two spots to number five as the team finished with a final score of 640, three strokes behind fourth place Union and five strokes behind third place Richfield. The Dinos were led in the final day of competition by Carson Martinez, who shot a 77, improving by two strokes from his first day score of a 79. The Dinos had Brady Gagan at an 83, along with Nick Olson, and Caden Slavinsky registered the fourth score with an 86. The fifth place finish puts Carbon in the top five for the fourth consecutive year, the last two finishing in the top three. The Emory Spartans finished out the 3A golf season in eighth place after shooting a 71 on Monday. Oakley Toomer fired a 73 on Tuesday. As a team, Emory finished with a final score of 687, finishing 35 strokes behind seventh place Grand. Outside of Toomer's 73, Shaden Kilpak shot an 88. Devin Guymon came in a third on the team with a 95, followed by Taylor Lindsay's 96. Oakley Toomer entered the final day in contention for the overall leader. Individually, he was trailing by just one stroke, and unfortunately, he falls one stroke short of the top spot in the 3A classification with a 144 over 2 days. Morgan's Nathan Pressler finished in first. The stellar performance for Toomer at the state championship caps off a brilliant year in which he was the overall winner of the Region 15 classification. Congratulations to both Carbon and Emory on successful 2018 golf seasons. We move over to high school soccer, and the Emory Lady Spartans closed out the regular season by suffering a 3-0 loss to the Manti Templars on the road yesterday afternoon. Emory trailed 2-0 at the end of the first half, and Manti found the back of the net one more time in the second half. The loss marks the third consecutive game in which Emory has not picked up a win. After starting the region season 4-1, Emory tied with Grand 2-2 back on September 20th, suffered a 7-3 loss to Richfield on September 27th, and a 3-0 loss to Manti last night. Now, the Lady Spartans have more than qualified for the state championship tournament. They'll enter as the number 3 seed from the Region 15 classification. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll go over the 3A state bracket as soon as it becomes available. The Carbon Lady Dinos will wrap up the regular season tomorrow. They will travel on the road to meet the Juab Wasps. Tonight on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, the Mont Harmon Pirates will take on the Hopper Rams for the second and final time this season on the football field. Mont Harmon will enter tonight's contest at 4-2. They beat Hopper once already this season by 2 touchdowns. The live broadcast tonight will begin at 5:30 p.m. with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. We'll be joined by Vinny Rondinelli in the broadcast booth. Kickoff will follow at 6. You can also watch the game live or view the archive version at KOALITV.com. Again, that'll be tonight. Mont Harmon and Helper on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. And we end by taking a look at Drive Time Sports this afternoon. We'll be joined by Emory High School football coach John Famalo. We'll break down Emory's loss last week on the road to the Morgan Trojans and preview this Friday's home contest against the Union Cougars. Again, that'll be this afternoon on KOAL's Drive Time Sports beginning at 4 p.m. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Watch the games, you follow the team, you wear the colors with pride, and you have questions, and only one man can answer them. Get the answers to the tough questions.
Middle of the week, time for some high school football talk. Coming up this Friday, the Emory Spartans will continue the season. Only 2 games left, and after playing the first 3 region games away from home, Emory will close out the regular season with back-to-back games at Emory High School. Up first, it'll be the Union Cougars. Emory right now 1-2 in 3A North play, tied with the Carbon Dinos for 4th and 5th place, a game better than Judge Memorial. Ahead of both Carbon and Emory is Union, and so the Spartans have an opportunity to make the 3A North race extremely interesting down the stretch. Joining us right now to talk about this Friday's game against Union and this past Friday's 36-0 loss to the Morgan Trojans, we have Coach John Famalo over the phone right now. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you again for the time today.
Hey, appreciate you having me on, Jordan.
Coach, we'll start by talking about Friday's game, road contest against Morgan. It represented the third road contest in as many region games for this team. It actually started off very well. I mean, you guys managed to really compete at a high level, I thought, with Morgan throughout the first quarter. Had an opportunity to make some noise early on in the second with a red zone visit, but all in all, it was all for naught because this team ends up picking up a 36-0 win over Emory. Yet at the same time, like I said, there was some competitive football played in this game, you know, I guess in the first, I don't know, 15, 16 minutes of game action.
No, that's how I felt. I mean, we came out, I think when we stopped them on a third down, we had a fourth and nine, and, you know, I had one of our players just kind of slip on the outside, and, you know, the kid gets wide open, and, you know, they end up scoring. but I felt like we answered. You know, we had a drive of our own in that first quarter to be able to chance to score there within the five, and you know, we just made a few mistakes there on bad snaps, and you know, it's a penalty, and it just kind of hosed our drive. And you know, in a team like that, you just can't make mistakes because they're just a good team overall. And so, you know, who knows how it could have ended up to get that score, but at the end of the day, they did a good job and made the plays they needed to and ended up with the victory.
Yeah, again, that's a team that is very good, and I know that they kind of play into Emory's defensive strength, and that's attacking through the air. They want to throw the football. Coach, I thought for the most part, Carter Thackray, who's a really good-looking quarterback and only a junior for Morgan, at times he had his struggles in this game. I mean, not necessarily because the pocket was collapsing, but I thought the coverage was fantastic throughout the better part of the game, to say the least.
No, I felt like we did. You know, I know he's a good quarterback, and he kind of pick you apart, and, you know, we kind of picked our poison. You know, we rushed three, dropped eight, and I think we were able to control the deep ball. Then they just started running a lot of short underneath stuff, and so, but they ran the ball well. But, you know, I thought so far as going in, you know, we just wanted to make sure we didn't give up the big play, with the exception of that one in the first half. I felt like we did a good job of staying over the top of their receivers and really shutting them down that way. But then they just kind of ran a lot of underneath stuff that kind of hurt us. And when you didn't make tackles, we missed a few tackles, and that made it just tough for us. But I thought defensively we had moments where we looked good.
Offensively, Coach, the run attack was non-existent for this offense, and I know that always makes things a little difficult, especially when you want to throw the football. Morgan kind of made Emory a one-dimensional squad in this contest. When you go back and you look at the tape, what was it? Was it just dominance with their front four? Is that what kind of stifled that rushing attack? And, of course, I know we were a little undermanned up front as well, but, I mean, maybe a combination of both.
I think it was a combination of both, but, you know, their front four are pretty tough. You look at them, there's a couple kids, their nose and their D tackles, they're really good. You know, and like you say, we're a little undermanned, and but at the same time, you know, they just do a good job of what they do. And we couldn't get physical enough on that front, you know, and that's where the battle begins. Can't match that physicality, and moving that line of scrimmage, that just makes for a long day. And so, again, that dictated us throwing the ball a little bit more than we probably wanted to. And in the day, you know, I thought we moved the ball at times well, throwing the ball. But when you can't run, that playbook shrinks down quite a bit in what you can do. And so, you know, it made it tough for us.
All things considered, what the dominance up front for Morgan in this game, when you go back and you assess the way Kyson played, I mean, how did you view that, Coach, now that you've had time to look at the video and kind of dissect things?
Like I said, I thought we were able to, I think we had under 200 yards passing, but I mean, our short passing game was the extension of our run game, is what we had to do. I felt like he did a good job there. You know, we had in the red zone, I think we had an interception there. It made it tough, but other than that, I thought he distributed the ball around to players that we needed to, and you know, that short game was something I felt like we needed to take advantage of, especially we couldn't run, and you know, I thought he did a good job with that.
You guys did also encounter another injury in this game. Zion Gibson goes down in the first half. That definitely didn't help the rushing attack any. I mean, he's been a nice change of pace back for Rance all year long, and you guys were without him for the final two quarters.
Yeah, and that made it tough because, I mean, he's a solid player on both sides of the ball. You know, he does a lot on the defensive side and on the running side. Like you say, he just gives a little bit of a change up to what Rance does. And so missing him the second half didn't help, our cause. But, you know, if we miss him this week, and then, you know, that hurts us a little bit more. But at the same time, the other kids have an opportunity to step up. And so, you know, that's what you preach to the kids, that, you know, that's part of why you practice hard, and that you get an opportunity. And when you get that opportunity, you make the most of it.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach John Fumalo with the Emory Sport and Football Squad. Coach, now that you guys are sitting at 1-2, thankfully, that wretched road trip is behind you. I mean, that's a tough stretch. On the road at Judge, on the road at Carbon, and then on the road against Morgan. I knew at the beginning of the season that was going to be somewhat of a daunting stretch. I know it doesn't get any easier in these final two home games, but it's got to be nice to finally return home and play in front of the hometown crowd.
Yeah, I think for the kids it's nice. Again, for familiar circumstances, familiar things that, you know, with our home field. And so, with homecoming this week, hopefully kids are, you know, excited to play, and, you know, Union's a good team, but it's nice to be home, not be on the road. And so I think it's a good opportunity for us to hopefully, you know, get on the plus side again and give ourselves an opportunity to reach some of the goals that we set for ourselves.
You guys have one region win as it sits right now at 1-2, kind of a logjam. In fact, this game on Friday night is monumental because if you take a look at it, you guys are tied with Carbon at 1-2. Union's just one game better than you guys. And, Coach, I think it's a very winnable contest. I know Union has a couple of standout players that we can talk about in just a moment, but, I mean, all in all, it's a winnable game. And if you guys were to grab this game, you could climb as high as number 3 in the region still.
No, that's the thing. I mean, like you say, there's a log jam right there. There's one game that separates us from Union, and so it's a big game for us and a big week for us. And so I think the kids recognize that, and so our preparation is such that we might be able to, you know, if we can get ourselves ready both physically and, you know, we can start executing a little better, then, you know, I give ourselves a chance to get into that top, you know, 3, which is a big deal for us.
Let's talk about Union. Lincoln Labrum is a standout as far as what he can do offensively. Coach, really, when I look at the production of Union, and I've had the opportunity to watch him live once already this season, the bulk of what they do is based on Lincoln Labrum. I mean, he can get outside the pocket. If you don't contain the outside, he's going to make you guys pay, but he can also throw the football downfield as well. I think if you find a way to contain him, Union becomes very vulnerable offensively, to say the least. He's definitely the engine that pushes the train.
Yeah, I mean, he's the key to what makes them go. And so for us to be able to control him, I mean, he's a dual threat quarterback and he can throw the ball as well as he can run the ball. And so controlling him and what he can do, you know, I think in the aspect of making sure we control the run, making it one-dimensional, throwing the ball, I pick my poison even though he can throw a little bit. You know, I think we got to really try to get him to throw the ball a little bit more that we can get. That's where our strength is, I believe. And so shut down the run and keep him one-dimensional on running and or throwing the ball, I think we'll be in good shape.
As far as the defensive scheme, Coach, going into it, you mentioned last week, you're going to rush 3, you're going to drop 8. What do you do against Union? Do you change things up drastically against this team? Do you put 4 on the defensive front? I mean, how do you guys approach it this week?
I think you got to get some pressure on him. I think we will play, you know, a lot of uptight pressure on the outsides and then put a little bit of pressure on him. And again, if we can shut down that run, then, you know, I think taking away a little bit of the RPO stuff that they do, some of us, I think that'll limit them on what they can do. And so, you know, from a defensive aspect, you know, scheme, that's, you know, our plan is to put a little bit of pressure and then, you know, play tight on the outsides and like I say, have them make a throw.
Well, as far as what Union has defensively, I know they do have some size up front, Coach. And Emory, again, last week a little bit undermanned. We'll talk about that in a moment. But it's not what we saw from Morgan. So I would expect the run game to be a little bit more efficient. Even without Zion Gibson this week, I would expect Brantz to have some success on Friday.
No, I think so. Like I say, being a little bit undermanned and, you know, Morgan's front, that's probably the best front we've seen all year. They're forward. Solid men up front there, and so I'm not saying that Union's not good on the front. I think they have a decent front, but hopefully we get some guys back and we can, you know, do some things that way to help us offensively establish some things.
Coach, let's talk about the injury front. You guys were down a couple of big pieces going into Friday's game with Jesse Barnett and also Dayton Bailing were both out of that contest. And then I talked about Zion Gibson. He suffers a concussion in this contest. Those are 3 key players to a team that's already very low in numbers and low with experience. What does the injury front look like going into Friday's game?
We're hoping to get Jesse back, hoping to get Dayton back. Those are 2 big kids, two linemen that, again, we rely on that we didn't have last week, which made it a little bit tough to run the ball. So hopefully we can get those 2 back. And so, again, probably without Vine this week. And then Braxton Young, kid on the defensive side, and then it helps us on the offensive side. Hopefully we can get him back. He was out last week too. And so, I have 3 key kids that I had out last week that hopefully I can get back this week, depending on how they respond to concussion protocol and, you know, taking it slow with them and making sure that they're healthy first.
I know the attitude always needs to be next man up. That's difficult to go next man up when you're already down in numbers, but you only have 4 seniors to begin with, Coach. That's a tough concept.
No, that it is. I mean, like you say, and we knew that going in, we were thin, and, you know, an injury or 2 here makes a big difference because, I mean, we go from small class in our junior class to, you know, I'm pulling up a lot of sophomores playing, and, you know, that's that's a big task for a sophomore to step up and play varsity football. But we've had some success with some kids, and hopefully, they'll continue to grow and get better. And that's where you're at when you talk next man up. Is you look on that sideline, you're looking at the next kid, and sometimes even a freshman. And as a coach, that's a little bit scary to stick a freshman in there. But that's kind of where our program's at right now, number wise.
Well, Coach, I always appreciate you making time to join us and talk about last week's game and this week's game. Best of luck against Union, and we'll see you there.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it, Jordan.
Again, that's Coach John Famala with the Emory Spartan football team taking out the time to talk about Friday's matchup. Do not forget, you can listen live right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. You can also stream the game live by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. Just click on the Listen Live link. You can pick your broadcast. If you want the Emory game or if you want the Carbon game, I know the Dinos are playing host to that same Morgan team this Friday. We'll talk more Carbon High School football on the show tomorrow. We've got a break for just a moment. When we return, we're going to move to the national sports scene. Coming up this Saturday, we have a massive MMA fight, UFC 229, featuring the return of Conor McGregor in the cage. He'll go toe-to-toe with Habib. It's Habib McGregor. I'm looking forward to this event. Larry Pepe, who is a pro MMA expert, he is going to join us in just a bit. We'll get a pep talk from Larry Pepe. He'll break down Saturday night's extravaganza. We'll talk UFC when we return on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Excited for this next segment. We haven't talked MMA in a couple of weeks. Whenever we talk MMA, we bring in Larry Pepe, who is just a guru, genius when it comes to the sport. Larry's joined us for quite some time to talk MMA, and he's joining us again right now to break down Habib McGregor, which is going down this Saturday at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Larry, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much for the time.
Oh, you're more than welcome, and thanks for the intro. I'm going to save that one, I think.
It's all true. I love your insight, and we actually have a very interesting card coming up this Saturday. I think the build-up, maybe it's one of those fights as far as the main event goes where it's more exciting outside of the cage than it is inside the cage. I mean, I use that term a lot in boxing. We've had fights like that multiple times. Typically, Floyd Mayweather fights were typically more exciting outside the ring for the casual fan than they were inside of the ring because of his domination. And I'm wondering, Larry, and I want your opinion on this straight out, is that the case with this particular fight, Habib McGregor?
I don't think so. Well, let me go back. Yes, but not to the same degree as a Floyd fight, for example. Like, I always used to feel with Floyd fights, like, as masterful as he was and everything else that goes along with it, the build-up was always significantly more interesting and entertaining than his fights because he's such a defensive wizard, right? So you knew going into a Floyd fight, unless you were stupid, that you were probably going to watch a 12-round decision, and you were going to probably watch another boxer, insert name here, swing and miss at Floyd 80 or 90% of the time. And that's what a Floyd fight is. But the build-up to the Floyd fights, the 24-7s or, the all-accesses and the videos and the press conferences and things like that, that was really the entertaining part. In this case, I feel like the build-up, to be really honest, Jordan, has been virtually non-existent. McGregor did not want to do like a press conference tour, like the world tour type thing they did with Floyd. Not saying they should have gone to 10 places like they did with Aldo. That was ridiculous. But they should have at least done, I would think, 4, because McGregor is gold on the mic, and he can sell a fight like no one else in MMA. They've only had one press conference. They didn't let the public in, which I know they did the same thing with Triple G and Canelo. I think that's a disaster. I think not having the public there makes it feel like, they're sitting in the back of a restaurant somewhere with a couple of people asking them questions. So that didn't go over very well. He was unhinged there, like usual, but without that energy of the fans and all that type of thing. I just don't feel like the buildup has been significant here. The difference here is that both of these fighters have very potent offenses and ways to end this fight. So unlike a Floyd fight where you go in and say, hey, it's going to be entertaining as hell in the buildup, and then we're going to get a decision and probably be disappointed, I think this fight, this specific Conor McGregor fight particularly, there's been very little buildup, so not a whole lot to be entertained by outside the cage. And I actually think the fight will deliver because either Conor's going to land a big shot and finish him, or Khabib is going to maul him like a rabid bear on the ground and finish him, in my opinion. So I think either way, fans are going to walk away with more entertainment inside the cage on this one than outside, which is not always the case with these type of fights.
Well, Larry, when I look at a matchup, and I'm gonna reference Canelo Triple G here, I always look for real animosity. And you can typically tell when something is being fabricated to sell a fight or something is real. Okay, Canelo and Triple G do not like each other. I think that was obvious by the perception of that they'd never really had anything choreographed. You know, there was no little insults, childish insults. It was strictly business. And when the two stared each other in the eyes, things got heated for the very first time. To me, that points to real animosity. Conor is a salesman. Khabib, in my opinion, has real animosity towards Conor McGregor based off of everything that happened with the bus attack. And I believe that's something that intrigues me in this fight. I think there's real hate between these two.
Yeah, there's no question that there's real... no question. You're 100% right. This is not... You know, people... Like Dana White talks about that, you know, Conor is the greatest ever at mental warfare and all this other stuff. But, of course, he's in love with Conor, so you have to factor that into everything that he says. This is not – I've seen people try to spin this that, oh, Conor is masterful. He's getting a Khabib emotional. And everything. First of all, I don't know that Khabib gets emotional. I didn't see any sign of it. But there is no question that Khabib Nurmagomedov wants to destroy and punish Conor McGregor. I do have a question of how much of the animosity on Conor's part is real, because this is what he does all the time. So you say, well, how many times am I going to go to that well and think it's real? I know the bus attack, people as oh, look at the bus attack, has to be real. I don't even completely buy that, because to be perfectly honest, if he hated Khabib so much and he really wanted to get at Khabib, which you would suggest would be the case if somebody truly despises someone and wants to hurt them, you don't throw a dolly at a bus. You show up a half hour earlier, you walk right into where Khabib is doing press, and you go over and try to punch him. I mean, he knew where he was when he was there and would have had access to him if he really wanted a piece of him so bad. I think, to be perfectly honest, I think the emotions play to Khabib's favor in this fight. Khabib is not, I mean, look, you know, you never know what's going to happen. I will eat my hat if Khabib walks in, chin up, and sprints across the cage a la Jose Aldo and swings wildly and sets himself up for a counterpunch knockout. I will be stunned. I will probably be more stunned than any analyst in MMA or combat sports if that were to happen, because Khabib's not that guy. Khabib knows what he does well, and he makes you stop him from doing that. And for people who watch the Ally Aquinta fight and they go, oh, look, he stood with Al for the last three rounds. If he does that with Conor, well, first off, I don't think Conor's going to be there in the third round. But the difference is, yeah, he stood with him and outstruck him about 8-1 statistically. And he, at that point, had already hurt Al and worn Al down. And I just don't think he had any fear at that point or any concern at that point of being knocked out. So if that's the fight you're going to point to as the Conor backer, if you're going to point to the Michael Johnson fight where Michael Johnson landed one good punch on Khabib in the face and it looked like it stopped Khabib from coming forward for a second, didn't knock him down, didn't have him disoriented, didn't have him grabbing the cage so he wouldn't fall, none of that, just kind of, it looked like he misstepped for literally 1 second, and 15 seconds later, Michael Johnson was on the ground getting annihilated. If that's what you're going to point to, I don't think that's the case. So I don't see Khabib being emotional, but Conor looks over the top emotional and like he's got a million pints of adrenaline flushing through his veins. And this is a guy who historically has terrible cardio. So if you combine emotion with bad cardio to begin with, that gas tank probably empties sooner. And we've already seen it empty predominantly about 7 or 8 minutes in. So I don't think that bodes well for Conor backers.
Again, we're being joined right now by Larry Pepe, MMA expert, as we talk about the upcoming fight coming this Saturday, Conor McGregor going toe-to-toe with Khabib. I got to ask you this, Larry. Is it dangerous from a UFC's perspective to give Conor McGregor, what was it, a 6 or 8 fight contract that they just gave him, and put him in the cage with Khabib immediately? And the reason I say that, I know that losses in boxing are different than losses in the cage, but most of what the draw to the casual, lighthearted MMA fans with Conor McGregor is the excitement at the press conferences. That kind of fades away every time you suffer a loss, doesn't it?
Oh, I think it does. I think the fight to make, quite frankly, was the Nate Diaz fight. I think, you know, the trilogy fight, easily marketable. Conor doesn't hold a belt. Diaz doesn't hold a belt. I felt like that was the path to go. Not that Diaz is an easy fight for him. Let's not forget, he got choked out in the first fight in the second round. And in the second fight, he barely eked out a 5-round decision over Nate. So a third fight would be intriguing. It would have sold more than any other fight, more than this one in my opinion, and would have been a less dangerous fight for him. Not saying he wins it. It's a 50-50, 55-45 fight in Conor's favor, but that is a more winnable fight in my opinion and would have made more money. That said, signing him to a long-term deal, that's fine because you don't want to give him the ability to leverage you to go somewhere else, so I understand that. But Khabib as the first fight back, you're right. This is a terrible stylistic matchup for him, in my opinion, and a fight that he is, in my opinion, very likely to lose. So to take the shine off that star is never good in any sport. And now, let's be honest, if he loses to Khabib, he got dominated by Floyd, so everyone will write that off, it was boxing. And then before that, he went 1-1 against Nate Diaz. So his record, the last 4 times people will have seen him fight, is 3 losses, probably all by stoppage, and 1 eked-out majority decision. But he's got a unique way of selling. People like his shtick. But to your point, you can only lose so much, and then your shtick sounds really like shtick because you're like, okay, that all sounds good, but the last 4 times I saw you walk to a ring or a cage, you lost.
Right, exactly. And after a while, that does wear, I know, on the casual and lighthearted fans. I mean, look, Mike Tyson was the same exact way in boxing. I mean, it was the same concept. You know, I talk to casual boxing fans all the time. They loved Mike Tyson, but they always bring up the era that they loved Mike Tyson. And for a reason, Larry, and for good reason.
Yep, I agree.
Let's talk about the fight card in general. If we go to 229, I mean, I always like to ask if you would purchase this fight card, especially knowing that we have Khabib and McGregor, we get Ferguson and Pettis. I know OSP is on this fight card going up against Reyes' first pay-per-view fight. Do you like the fight card enough to pay for it?
I do, really, because of the main event. You know, I think the main event, you are getting a unique opportunity to see in Khabib, you know, a guy who's 26-0 in MMA, has never lost a round in MMA. And then in Conor's fights are rarely boring, and he is an elite striker. He really is. I mean, for anything I've said, I don't think that he is a fantastic striker. He judges distance extremely well, has exceptional movement in the cage, and has power. I think his power is a little overrated when he goes up to 155. At 145, his power is crushing. At 155, quite frankly, it hasn't been absent Eddie Alvarez. But that said, you're getting a chance to see two fighters who are truly elite at what they do, and you're getting the ultimate chess match because you're getting, in my opinion, the ultimate striker versus grappler fight for the lightweight belt. So I think that's a big deal. I think, you know, Ferguson Pettis a couple of fights ago would have looked like a walkthrough for Tony Ferguson. Now it doesn't as much. I still favor Ferguson, but he is coming back from a bad knee injury that required surgery in a time frame that is months and months ahead of when we were told he would be able to fight. So you have to question, you know, is he 100%? And if he's not 100%, you know, how much do we buy Anthony Pettis' win over Michael Chiesa, which was impressive? He looked great in that fight. He got the finish. And is that going to be the resurgence of Anthony Pettis, the former lightweight champion? I don't totally buy that. But against a what should not be 100% Tony Ferguson, how does that play out? And if they're similar fighters and that they both have unorthodox and very good stand-up and excellent jiu-jitsu. So I like that fight a lot. We're going to find out if Dom Reyes is the real deal, because he's never fought anyone of OSP's caliber. OSP, a very good 205er, not championship level, but certainly not the bottom end of the roster either. So we'll find out more about Reyes. And then in the heavyweights, we have Derek Lewis and Alexander Volkov. I think Volkov wins that fight, but a very important fight for him because he's on a nice winning streak in a division that really does need contenders.
Larry, before I let you go, I want to get your assessment on once again on the McGregor-Habib fight. How does it end?
I think it ends with Habib mauling him on the ground. I think that, you know, if you're backing Conor, if you think he's going to win this fight, what you're really saying is that you think he's going to knock Habib out, because he's certainly not going to submit him. He's certainly not going to out-grapple him, for whatever the people in his camp are saying, which is certifiably insane. And he's unlikely to get a decision, because if it goes five rounds, it probably means Habib was taking him down repeatedly and beating him up on the ground. So if you're backing McGregor, if you're analyzing this fight and picking McGregor, what you're really saying is that he's going to land that one shot that either ends it or leads to the end because he hurts Habib so badly. Okay, that all sounds good. You're going to tell me that Conor's got wicked power. Don't totally agree at 155, but that's fine. You don't have to be super powerful if you land the right spot with the right punch, and he is definitely capable of doing that. But now you got to turn and go, okay, who's he fighting? Well, he's fighting a guy who's 26-0, who's never lost a single round, Jordan, not a fight, a round in his entire 26-fight MMA career. And, oh, yeah, you're fighting a guy who's never been knocked down in 26 fights. Now, if you're the McGregor backer, you're going to tell, oh, he's never fought anybody like Conor. Well, maybe not. But he has been kicked in the face by Edson Barboza and didn't get knocked down. He has been punched flush by Edson Barboza, who's a powerful striker, by Ally Aquinta, who's known to be a powerful striker, by Michael Johnson, who's known to be a powerful striker, and guess what? Never knocked down. So that's what you're betting on. You're betting that what has never happened in 26 fights is going to happen with that one-punch knockout, because absent that, I think Khabib wears him out. I think he takes him down. I don't think Conor can even get up from underneath Habib because his control is so good. But if he does get up, Habib's going to be right back on his hips, wearing him out, taking him down again or trying to, and making him expend energy. And I think he probably finishes him in the second, at the latest, third round.
Larry Pepe once again joining us to talk MMA. Larry, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Absolutely. I would invite them, because I'm trying to do less social media, I would invite them to go to pepperadio.com, and it's very simple. They'll be able to enter just their email address and a first name or an initial, and then they'll get emails from me whenever I do any appearances like this with you, Jordan. And they can also follow me on Twitter at Larry Pepe, P-E-P-E.
Larry, always a pleasure. Thank you again for the time. We'll do it again soon.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you, Jordan.
Great to talk some UFC on the show. We don't do that hardly enough. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return live from the Auto Farm Studios. We'll put the final touches on this Wednesday edition of the show.